Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Sarah Williams reporting. U.S. President Barack Obama and Cuban President Raul Castro were set to make history Saturday with a meeting on the sidelines of the Summit of the Americas in Panama. The face-to-face talks mark the first meeting of U.S. and Cuban leaders since 1956 and come after the two presidents announced plans in December to normalize relations between their two nations. At the opening of the summit Friday evening, Mr. Obama and Mr. Castro shook hands, a gesture widely seen as a symbol of their effort to bury decades of animosity. Mr. Obama hailed the opening between the two countries.
As the United States begins a new chapter in our relationship with Cuba, we hope it'll create an environment that improves the lives of the Cuban people. Not because it's imposed by us, the United States, but through the talent and ingenuity and aspirations and the conversation among Cubans from all walks of life, so they can decide what the best course is for their prosperity.
It has been 2 years since their first handshake at the memorial service for former South African President Nelson Mandela. The Saudi-led coalition launched new airstrikes Saturday against Shiite Houthi insurgents in Yemen's southern port city of Aden, killing at least 22 people. Riyadh's coalition carried out its aerial bombardment for the 17th straight day, with the fighting threatening to turn Yemen into a failed state. Local armed groups have resisted the southward advance of the Iranian-backed Houthi rebels, but the insurgents have taken control of key government facilities. Look at our website at voanews.com. This is VOA News. An Egyptian court has sentenced Mohamed Badi, the leader of the outlawed Muslim Brotherhood, and 13 other defendants to death for inciting violence. The sentences handed down Saturday also included life imprisonment for a U.S.-Egyptian citizen convicted of supporting the militant group. The rulings can be appealed, a process that could take years. The men are among the thousands detained after the ousting of Islamist President Mohamed Morsi in 2013. Gunmen stormed a camp for laborers in southwestern Pakistan Saturday, killing at least 20 people and wounding three others. Authorities say the pre-dawn assault took place in the remote Turbat district of Balochistan province. The victims were working on an under-construction bridge. Polling stations open in Nigeria Saturday for the final stage of a historic election cycle, with voters returning to the polls to elect governors and other state representatives. The concluding phase comes just 2 weeks after President Goodluck Jonathan became Nigeria's first incumbent leader to lose re-election at the ballot box. The 36 state governors are said to be among the most powerful politicians in Africa's top economy. A man from the U.S. state of Kansas is the latest American arrested on terrorist-related charges. The 20-year-old suspect was taken in custody Friday. Prosecutors say in the federal complaint that John Booker is accused of attempting to detonate a car bomb at a military base as part of a plot to support the Islamic State group. Barry Grissom is a U.S. attorney.
He identified Fort Riley as a good target. He did that because he believed the post was famous and that, quote, there are a lot of soldiers there, end of quote. The complaint also alleges that he put together what they're sometimes referred to as a martyr video or a propaganda video to be played after his death.
A second Topeka, Kansas man was also arrested and charged Friday with knowing about Booker's plan. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry will brief a skeptical Congress next week on a framework nuclear deal with Iran. Kerry is expected to tell Congress that the negotiating period with Iran is at a sensitive time. And thousands of people are flocking to Washington to enjoy one of the city's most celebrated springtime attractions. The cherry blossoms are expected to be at their peak Saturday and Sunday, just in time for the National Cherry Blossom Festival and parade in their honor. For some people coming down to the Tidal Basin and National Mall to enjoy the essence of these gifts from Japan has become an annual ritual. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
Reiterated his call for peaceful conduct during the elections, and he stressed the point about every stakeholder placing great emphasis on national unity and stability.
Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan calls for peace as citizens vote in a nationwide gubernatorial and local elections today.
The SAC Vice President Sumama then ordered his lawyers to go for constitutional interpretation on whether President Kuruma had the power to sack him.
A former Sierra Leonean vice president mounts a legal challenge over his sacking after President Enes Bai Koroma announced his replacement. We'll have details.
We have issues to do with our security agencies. The constitution provides for certain reforms, but even the reforms themselves are not happening.
And Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta tries to win the hearts and minds of Muslims against extremists. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has called on prospective voters and all citizens to ensure Saturday's gubernatorial election is peaceful and devoid of intimidation and harassment. Rubin Abati, the spokesman for President Jonathan, told me earlier that the leader expects the security agencies, including the police, to protect civilians during the poll.
Well, this week, Mr. President again reiterated his call for peaceful conduct during the elections. And he stressed the point about every stakeholder placing great emphasis on national unity and stability. And this was against the background of certain developments after the presidential and national assembly elections in the lead up to the gubernatorial and state house of assembly elections. Take a state like Rivers, where there has been a lot of exchange of hate speech. Take a state like Lagos, where there has also been a lot of ethnic sentiment, you know, affecting Igbos living in Lagos.
As the commander-in-chief, what is his message to these security agencies to ensure that prospective voters are protected and the territorial integrity of Nigeria is maintained?
Well, the security agencies have their jobs cut out for them. They already put up a good performance during the presidential and national assembly elections. And we have no reason to doubt they will succeed in maintaining the peace. And as for the areas where there is insurgency, the defense headquarters already made it clear that they are in the last phase of the operation. All the territories previously taken by terrorists have been recovered. And you can see that in the northeast, there were, you know, elections took place, voting took place peacefully in virtually every local government. You expect that to happen.
The president has been getting a lot of accolades from both local leaders and the international community for ensuring and not interfering in the work of INEC to administer credible elections and for conceding defeat during the presidential election. Is this the legacy the president wants to leave?
Certainly, yes. And he himself referred to it in the second paragraph of the statement he made after conceding to General Buhari. He said he promised Nigerians free and fair elections. And everyone has admitted that all the elections conducted under his watch have been free and fair. We have had a president who does not interfere in the outcome of elections, who allows the democratic space to accommodate and allow the people's free choice. And in that second paragraph, he made it very clear that that is the legacy that he would like to see endure, because it's a major thing that has happened in Nigerian democracy. He has succeeded in consolidating and strengthening Nigerian democracy and in strengthening the institutions. And it is instructive that people have been referring to the fact that he strengthened the electoral reform process. He appointed all the officials, the INEC chairman, the commissioners who conducted the elections, and yet he did not interfere. it did not influence the outcome. The Electoral Commission has remained independent. And then he lost in an election conducted by his own officials and by institutions that he himself built. And he immediately considered and said, this is good for our democracy. And I think that that is indeed very noble. It's a good lesson for all Nigerians. And in fact, it's not just President Jonathan that is being celebrated. All Nigerians have been celebrated for having been able to witness this moment where, through quality leadership, democracy appears very strong and has been strengthened and has been consolidated. And his hope, his own expectation, is that his successor will continue with this tradition and that this legacy will endure.
The president has been meeting some prominent members in society among ahead of his handing over peacefully to the incoming administration. What has been the message to these leaders as he meets them?
So the emphasis is on smooth transition. And already he and General Buhari, they've held at least one meeting. That was last week, Friday. And I think it's also very good that both leaders, President Jonathan and General Buhari, the president-elect, have been providing the leadership that is necessary at this particular moment. And that sends a strong message to all their followers that Nigeria is more important. And I think that that is the key message at this time, that our country is more important than any individual ambition. And that as Nigerians, we all have a responsibility to continue to take this country forward. And you see the average Nigerian saying, look, even if General Buhari's government takes office and power and it does not perform, the voters will again in the future use their votes, to make a very strong statement. So voter confidence is at an all-time high. And I think that that is very good for democracy in Nigeria.
Rubin Abati is the spokesman for Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. He spoke with me earlier from the capital, Abuja. Meanwhile, Nigeria is Africa's largest producer of oil and gas, and in the heartland of the country's oil production is Rivers State. Today, voters will choose a new state governor in a closely watched election that will largely be about who gets to control the state's oil wealth. For VOA, Chris Stein has this report.
Oil. It brings in 70% of the government revenue in Nigeria and underlies many of the private fortunes in Africa's largest economy. Rivers State and its capital, Port Harcourt, are at the heart of petroleum production. Two men are vying to lead the state in Saturday's election, Dikuku Peterside of the All Progressives Congress, or APC, and Nyasum Wike of the People's Democratic Party, or PDP. Social justice activist Lucky Onyeka says the state and its oil wealth is crucial for both parties.
Everybody have a stake in Rivers State because of the oil-rich state. No government wants to lose that particular state because of what is coming out from the state.
The outgoing Rivers State Governor, Rotimi Amaechi, led the APC's presidential campaign, which succeeded in getting General Muhammadu Buhari elected in last month's vote over the PDP's incumbent president, Goodluck Jonathan. Onyeka says having an APC governor in Rivers is part of the APC's overall strategy for governing the country now that it has the presidency.
Now, this is where the oil is. If they didn't get some people, anybody from this particular end, it would be difficult for the development to even see through normally. But in this time, we want meaningful development.
Anyakwi Nsirimovu, executive director of the Institute of Human Rights and Humanitarian Law in Port Harcourt, says many supporters of Wike want to keep the state under PDP control for ethnic reasons.
The president of the Federal Republic is from this area, and ethnic policies, I think, demands that, for some people, demands that this place remain loyal to him.
Whoever governs the state will play a crucial role in curbing militancy in the oil-producing region. Militants used to regularly bomb pipelines and kidnap oil workers across the Niger Delta, including in Rivers State, until a 2009 amnesty that gave them money and training in exchange for peace. Some former militants have said they will resume their fight now that Buhari is in power, and Nsirimovu says it will be up to the new governor to deal with them.
A good, listening, responsive governor in Niger Delta should be able to represent effectively the interests of the people of the Niger Delta, remove the politics, and deal with the human security issues in the Niger Delta.
Whoever wins will have to enforce their mandate with less money than previous governors. Oil is trading around $50 per barrel, making it lean times for all who depend on it for their livelihood. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
In Sierra Leone, the Supreme Court has started hearing the case of the sacked vice president. Lawyers for the vice president have asked the court to bar a newly appointed vice president from serving in the office. For VOA, Kelvin Lewis reports from the capital, Freetown, that lawyers for the newly appointed vice president say the Constitution does not contemplate a vacancy in the office.
The five judges of the Supreme Court of Sierra Leone have taken leave to consider whether they should issue an order stopping the newly appointed Vice President Victor Foe from acting in the office of Vice President. Some 5 weeks ago, the ruling All People's Congress or APC party dismissed the then sitting Vice President Alhaji Samsumana from among its ranks. A week later, President Kuruma relieved Alhaji Samsumana from his position as Vice President on the grounds that he no longer belonged to a political party, which was a continuous requirement to be eligible to serve as Vice President. 2 days later, President Kuruma appointed former Ambassador to China Victor Foe as the new Vice President. The sacked Vice President Sumana then ordered his lawyers to go for constitutional interpretation on whether President Kuruma had the power to sack him. But before the real case could start, the lawyers for the sacked Vice President Samsumana filed for an injunction to restrain the appointed Vice President from acting in the office of the Vice President until the real case was heard. In the injunction hearing, lawyers for the sacked Vice President argued that the action to sack the Vice President in a manner other than that which is provided in Sections 50 and 51 of the Sierra Leone Constitution is a violation of the Constitution. For this reason, they argued that the appointed Vice President could have signed a lot of agreements which would be difficult to overturn were he to stay in office. The defense lawyers for the Attorney General and the appointed Vice President argued that the Constitution does not contemplate a vacancy in the office of the Vice President. They say provision is not made for damages and therefore the injunction must be thrown out. Lawyers for Samsumana urged the court not to condone unconstitutional action because it will cause irreparable damage. The case was then adjourned with the Chief Justice promising that notices will be sent out for the date of ruling. For VOA Africa, I'm Kelvin Lewis reporting from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Meanwhile, Sierra Leoneans are protesting in Washington, D.C. against what they say is the flagrant violation of the Constitution by President Ernest Bai Koroma. Dr. Fuambai Amadu is the organizer of the protest and joins us live via telephone link up. Good afternoon, Dr. Fuambai.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. It's a beautiful day over here.
Well, I understand that. Let me ask you this, Dr. Fuambai. Supporters of President Ernest Bai Koroma are saying there's no justification for this protest at all. What do you say to that?
Oh, they're absolutely wrong. We're out here to exercise our rights, our democratic rights, to voice our disillusionment and our disappointment over, as you rightly said, the flagrant violation of Sierra Leone's constitution. So we have every right to be here, and it's our civic duty and our responsibility as Sierra Leonean citizens.
Well, but the vice president is in court, and supporters of the president are saying that he has no legitimacy whatsoever because he's not a member of the party anymore.
Well, first of all, we think that there were gross problems in regard to due process in his removal and in his expulsion from the APC party, but that's not why we're out here. We're out here because we know that he was illegally removed as vice president of the Republic of Sierra Leone. This, we say, is absolutely unacceptable, and that's why we are all out here, members of all different ethnic groups, children, women, men, we're all out here, and we're protesting. We're demonstrating against this infringement on democracy in Sierra Leone.
Well, they're saying that this is all ethnic-based because the former Vice President Samsumana comes from a different ethnic group. You are coming together against the president in this directive. What is your response to that?
This is absolutely wrong. There are so many people out here who are from the ethnic group, for instance, or Northerners who are Timonese. We have also people from the Southeast, Mendes, we have Creoles, we have people from who originated from different ethnic groups and regions in Sierra Leone. It's a completely multi-ethnic demonstration, and there is no, I mean, we consider ourselves all Sierra Leoneans. There's no division here across ethnic lines.
What is your next line of action to press home your demand to ensure the government respect the constitutional provisions as enshrined in Sierra Leone's constitution?
We are going to continue our demonstrations, our protests here all across the U.S. On April 27th, we're going to be in New York City. There are also protests in the United Kingdom, and there are other countries in Europe, there are cities in Europe where they're organizing demonstrations. We hope to have demonstrations in Sierra Leone as well. If not for open threats of violence, there would be protests there right now. So we are going to continue to protest. We're going to continue to demonstrate. We're going to continue to stand up for our constitution in Sierra Leone.
What is your expectation of the legal challenge that the former vice president, or the sacked vice president, Soumana, has mounted in Sierra Leone at the moment?
We are. I think there is a national consensus around the issue that this was an illegal sacking. And we expect that the justices will, in fact, do what is right and stand up for the country. And they will uphold the Constitution. We are confident that this will happen.
Well, the president or the government and the ruling party accuses Soumana of undermining the ruling party and undermining the country's stability, among other issues. Don't you think this is legitimate enough to sack him from his position that threatens to undermine Sierra Leone's territorial integrity and brings disaffection and disunity among the people?
These are accusations, these are allegations, and we have a constitution. There are procedures, there are protocols, and we expect that the president of Sierra Leone would follow the constitution. We expect this is about honoring the constitution, honoring due process and democracy in Sierra Leone. There's an impeachment process. If they feel that there are legitimate charges against the vice president, this should have been made public. It should have gone through parliament. There should have been an impeachment process. So we are standing here and we are demanding that democracy be upheld in Sierra Leone.
Well, there are issues of the vice president telling his so-called boys to go on rampage and attack opponents who are against his decision to use his voice to create confusion and beat up opponents.
Again, these are allegations that the vice president himself has completely denounced and said are untrue, that these are lies. If this is the case, then the government should have put on, or the president should have made their case before parliament. This is not something that the Constitution does not give the right to the president to sack the vice president. The vice president does not serve the president. He serves the Republic of Sierra Leone.
So briefly, who are you going to present your petition to concerning your objective of protesting what you describe as illegal undermining of the Constitution?
We're trying to raise awareness here in the United States, where we are residents. We're right here in front of the White House. Basically to raise awareness, to register our discontent, and to demand that democracy be upheld in Sierra Leone. This is about making our voices heard. This is about making it known to the world, and especially where we are, to the United States, to the Obama administration, that we are not going to sit idly by and allow Sierra Leone to disintegrate into a dictatorship.
Thank you very much. Dr. Fwambai Amadou is the organizer of the protest against Sierra Leonean president, and as by Karoma, she spoke with me from the nation's capital. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has urged Muslims to join his government in the struggle against militant Islam by informing on sympathizers. But as Mr. Kenyatta launches a battle for Muslim hearts and minds, his security forces must first deal with the deep mistrust, especially among ethnic Somali Muslims in the country. Emmanuel Kisangani is a senior researcher in the African Conflict Prevention Program at the University of Security Studies. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him by phone in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, and asked him about the reaction of the government to the threat of Al-Shabaab.
That has been the challenge. We have witnessed much to do with the tokenism. You know, when something like this happens, or Westgate happens, then you have this emotional statement. But after that, it looks like we're all going to lull and forget about the threat, especially from a government point of view. The security agencies will argue that they have preempted quite a number, and I understand the challenge that, you know, you need to be right. For security agencies, you need to be right all the time. A terrorist needs to be right only one time. So I understand the challenge, but I think, in my opinion, what is being done is not sufficient, I'm quite sure, particularly like where you eliminate a very key constituency. You know, some of these individuals live, operate. If you look at Garissa, they came there, stayed in Garissa town, so stayed within communities. So you expect that the community is included in terms of gathering intelligence and preempting such acts. But if you see responses, much of which has been through coercion, but then it actually alienates a key constituency that can be a source of information. So I will argue that the approach, you could critique the approach in terms of dealing with the problem, and also critique even efforts. You know, we have issues to do with our security agencies. The constitution provides for certain reforms, but even the reforms themselves are not happening. So you have quite a number of issues in terms of, say, fashioning a response that could be effective to these groups.
After these attacks, on April 4th, the government in Kenya published a list of entities suspected to be associated with Al-Shabaab, including 13 of the largest Somali-operated money transfer companies working in Kenya. How would this not look like targeting this minority group?
It is a double-edged sword. We know there's money certainly coming in from charity organizations in the Middle East and other places from the diaspora. But these individuals also get do tax Somalis in areas that they control. It's a double-edged sword because you have so many innocent people that do use this facility, given their own context where they rely on people in the diaspora. So unless you're strategic enough, you know which ones are actually specifically used to send money, which is quite difficult, I'm sure. Literally each and everyone out there will use those channels. So it reinforces these historical perceptions that the government, especially Kenya, the perception that possibly they're being targeted or the government is against them. So if it is taken that way, then it doesn't aid the cause. Although I know that for the government, because of the part of the reaction here, people thinking it's not doing enough, so it has to do a bit of something a bit dramatic to appear to be doing something. In my opinion, whether that will work, I think it is debatable. We've seen it being applied elsewhere. I'm not sure whether the extent to which it has actually helped to address the problem of radicalization or to limit activities of these violent extremists.
That was Emmanuel Kisiangani, a senior researcher at the Institute of Security Studies. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from Nairobi.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, combating terrorism across the continent. From the Al-Shabaab militant massacre of nearly 100 university students in Kenya to the kidnapping of 600 schoolgirls by Boko Haram. Is Africa's war on terrorism winnable? That's next time, right here on VOA Africa. Next on Let's Talk, join host Sunday Shamari and his guests discussing the hip-hop culture. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clothier, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. Personally. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today. I promise you go home, you won't tell daddy. I give it to you like you never had it. Screaming church and like speaking Chinese. Now waiting me this. Pack a boom boom. Now waiting as Saga. Cause she know one day. She talks as she know one day. I know go lie. The things within my mind. When I see you dancing, girl, you got me high. And if you wanna try, make a good day tonight. Cause I'm in the mood, as long as you're feeling the good, I deal with you. Personally, I go deal with you. Personally, I go deal with you. I go deal with you personally, professionally. I see what you doing intentionally. Get me wanted physically. So give it to me radically. Emotionally, psychologically. You're turning me on biologically. Sexually, dramatically. And she talks that she know one thing. I know go lie. The things within my mind. When I see you dancing, girl, you got me high. And if you wanna try, make a good day tonight. Cause I'm in. As long as you're feeling the good, I go deal with you. Personally, I go deal with you. Personally, I go deal with you. I go deal with you. Yeah, exceptionally. Reason spiritually, money speaking so drastically, magically, internationally, Abba, abatically, Rama, now for dictionary, Saga, for she know one me, she talks that she know one me. I know what I, the things within my mind, when I see you dancing.
Mr. Giving you all you need. Oh, yeah, Sadiwaka, Sadiwaka, Openiwa, Sadiwaka, Owalewa. Baby, go down, money, go to Sadiwaka, 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 Openiwa, Sadiwaka, Owalewa. Baby, go down, money, go to Sadiwaka, 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 Openiwa, Sadiwaka, Owalewa. Baby, go down, money, go to Sadiwaka, 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 Openiwa.
Let's go, Mr. DJ, what are you saying? Put us on a replay. After this one, put it back on replay. If you're feeling this one, let me hear you say. Dash on the beat, double bang, killing this. We don't count with the queen, we don't count for the street. Count with the twist and the dance with your hips. Sense on the scene, I'll tell them what you think.
Body man they know the dance floor. DJ why you never ask for? Play that song and then they ask for. Ask for, ask for. All man they know the dance floor. DJ why you never ask for? This that the song and then they ask for. Ask for. I say no girl to girl or man to man. We don't hold on hand to hand. Find for the girl let me BBM. Find for me girl make a BBM. Sexy girl see me with them like Titanic when I sing with them.
Tonight.
Yeah.
What you trying to do?
I'm rolling with you, Daddy.
Oh, yeah? You gonna roll with me? Alright, yeah, let's go. What is this?
Come the Jones like a Indiana. Mm-hmm. Hey,
You never seen her before, I guess. You never seen the way that she wanna get. You never seen her dip it down low, spin her body like a turntable, then suck her dress. I know you wanna know how she goes down low and the rhythm take control. I know you wanna know why she got me trapped in a limbo. That's what it seems. I wanna control it, yo. I'm about it, yo. I'm about it, yo. I just want to know.
I get this friend where we get from Calabar, Labaken, Fade. Come to think she be my personal person. But anytime when she come around, she get this feeling where they do me like fever. And when she dance with my Mezebu, he they be me like Senna for Fana. Me like how she play the bass line, it makes me sing ooh la la la. The way she do, the way she that, it makes me sing ooh la la la. Oh yeah. When mommy come back, she a jump. Daddy come to me a cross. And when they ask me, it was me. That's what me talk say. I don't like this shirt, touching body. But you know, say my mama don't like them. I don't want this shirt touching body. But you know, say my papa don't like them. It's a lot of fun. Oh, na 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 na.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Nyang.
Welcome, Africa. It's always a pleasure for me to share my reflections with the audience of Voice of America on the African continent. Every passing week, I pay close attention to the headlines with respect to what is happening in America's relations with Africa. This week, President Obama is very much involved with his neighborhood. That is the Organization of American States. This is a very important event for the Americans and the people of Latin America. And it has great relevance for all the other countries in the world dealing with the United States. Cuba is back into greater prominence in America's relations with the people of Cuba. Recently, President Obama has taken a very important decision in opening relationship with Cuba. This is a very important event at many levels with respect to the president himself as a person, an individual human being, living at the time when the Cuban missile crisis could have led to the end of human beings on this planet. He is one of the fortunate ones. He was born in 1961, when President Kennedy was the president of the United States, the people of Cuba became growingly separated from the Americans. And that Cuban Revolution, which was headed by Fidel Castro, a young man at that time, very much like the young men who were beginning to take power in Africa at that time. President Kwame Nkrumah was the leader of the African young people who were taking power at that time. In 1958, when Ghanaians were 1 year old as a nation in Africa, they were independent African countries in Liberia, not far from Ghana, ended by President Tubman. And then in Ethiopia, Emperor Selassie. These were the leading political countries in Africa at that time. The rest of the African countries were yet to be independent. When President Kwame Nkrumah took power in Ghana, and the Ghanaians celebrated their independence in the March of that year, another political figure in world history at that time was the Vice President of the United States. That was Richard Nixon, who came to Ghana's independence. And a very important moment in the history of himself. He was the Vice President to President Eisenhower, who inherited a crisis in South America when a revolution erupted under the leadership of Fidel Castro. This has great implications for American policy with the Latin Americans, because at that time the United States was facing communism not in Europe as the Soviet Union came into being under the American presidents in 1917. So when the revolution spread to Latin America, this was the first American foreign policy telling in South America. President Obama has inherited these legacies, these challenges. As a result of the struggle, many of these Africans who were fighting against colonialism and imperialism ended in Cuba. And we have the tri-continental crisis, and this became an very important development in America's relationship with Africa. Terrorism, which was very much linked to the anti-colonial movement, which started as a non-violent movement. Then we started in South Africa, failed in South Africa, went to India and succeeded. Then the movement became more actively involved in the United States, and Martin Luther King, who led that struggle, who went to Ghana with his wife, when Ghana became independent, met Lumumba, and then you connect and all of that. This terrorism that started in the struggle against settler colonialism in South Africa, in East Africa, in North Africa, in Algeria, people like Jesse Jackson were actively involved, looking for the presidency, tried twice without success. At the time when Mandela passed away, they had a funeral for him. That event was very important in the history of America, the history of Cuba, and in the history of the world, because when we had the funeral of the late Nelson Mandela, Raul Castro, who succeeded his brother as president of Cuba, met the American president there without talking to each other. And that's the way it is today. And the Africans are caught up in this whole narrative. As we look at President Obama going through this long history of America's relationship with the people of South America, and Cuba is back in the game of diplomacy and politics with the Americans. And that's the way it is today, as I see it.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nyang. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. I remember, as the elders say, he who moves with each day is better than another who waits for luck. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The small, troubled West African nation of Guinea-Bissau has faced many challenges in recent years. Frequent military coups have stymied democratic rule, and in the vacuum of effective government, international criminals have targeted remote areas of its seacoast for transshipment of illegal drugs from South America to markets in Europe. It is a hopeful sign, then, that international donors, encouraged by recent political stability there, pledged more than 1 billion euros to support a 10-year development program. Donors attending a conference held in Brussels last month, hosted by the European Union, endorsed an ambitious plan prepared by the government to promote growth, development, and improve government services, and in so doing, strengthen democratic institutions there. As a friend and partner of the Bissau-Guinean people, the United States congratulates the vision of the plan presented by Prime Minister Domingos Pereira and President José Mário Vaz. They have clearly articulated both the aspiration and specific proposals required for a strong, vibrant, and prosperous Guinea-Bissau within the larger community of West African nations. We thank the European Union, the United Nations Development Program, and the government of Guinea-Bissau for organizing this conference. The United States stands as a partner with the international community to build a strong, enduring relationship with Guinea-Bissau that will help in meeting the goals outlined at the conference. Establish a strong, diversified economy that provides opportunities for young people, reform and strengthen democratic institutions, fight corruption and promote good governance, and reduce poverty. For our part, we are committed to continuing our bilateral cooperation in the security sector, military sector, and on judicial reform, in addition to our technical assistance in the health sector. Bissau Guineans should be proud of the progress that has taken place in the 10 months since elections, and they can count on the continued support of the United States.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.